colleagues from the department will I think be more proficient than I would be at answering some of the more specific issues which were asked. And as I said, it was a pity that the Honourable Colour Barnett came in a little bit late because of the bad traffic in a DA controlled city. Okay.
Appropriate more land and widen the road there, then there was no surface now.
because she made a pertinent point, but which I thought, but in her absence, I tried to address. Because what you said was, you know, that this program has been around since, as the expanded public works program has been around since 2004. Why haven't you got a right, and why does it appear that you're on a downhill slope suddenly? And it's a good question, and indeed it has been around since 2004, and for instance, in the first 5-year phase, the target was 1 million work opportunities in the first 5 years, and collectively, not sort of on the public works, but collectively in South Africa, departments, municipalities, other departments, municipalities, provinces, collectively, we hit that target within 4 years, okay. And the AG didn't have any problem with our DPWP's reporting of the million within 4 years and the more than a million after the 5-year period. The target then became 4.5 million work opportunities in the second phase, and we didn't quite hit it. We got to about 4.3 million in the second 5-year phase, but it came close and did well, and probably in practice because, yeah, okay. Probably did meet the target, but not everything was reported adequately. It's only in these last two quarters, the first two quarters of this reporting year, or this past reporting year, that the AG has changed the goalposts. And that's what I was trying to explain. Because I said, beware, before we get into the detail, it's going to be a bit of a worrying and pessimistic picture. But we don't think that out there, we think uneven at some time, we think out there we're easily hitting the target of work opportunities, and not just hitting that target, with many other positive things are being done as well in the course of these programs. But because of the way in which the AG now has insisted on how the reporting should happen, we're getting massive underreporting. Now, we're in favor of the AG being tough and asking hard questions. But to whom should the questions be directed, and who should be the accounting officer? So if you look at the sheet that was handed out separately, that one. So that was the AG having a look at 45 projects in 5 provinces. 5 provinces, okay? More or less, we think, randomly selected. And I don't think you have it, but it was supposed to hand it up as a separate thing. Okay. We've got copies there. So. Okay. That's absolutely fine with the appropriation bill almost at the party. But okay. In the public interest and for a public good. Okay. So, if you look at the top row, in quite a few projects, with 80 sounds that in the top row, there were EPWP projects happening in all 45 of the projects visited. But in the case of the top row, they weren't being reported to DPW. Okay. In the second row, the beneficiaries were on their attendance registers, but in the case of Mbashi, 4 of them were not included in the data that had been passed on to our records at DPW. In the case of Buffalo City, 1 hadn't been reported, and so on. In the case of Pailisha, it was 52. Okay. So there's an attendance record of people participating, and presumably actually participating, but because of the complication of reporting effectively and adequately according to the new goalposts which have changed from the AG, the stuff isn't coming through, and then the AG has to make the fine. That's just 45 projects with things, assuming, with the possible exception of those last two roads, both in Mpumalanga, Mbombela and Mpumazi, where there are worrying signs of perhaps misreport, or there's no ID copies, no attendance registers. That's worrying, and we would agree with it. It's not our fault, that's happening, but we need to know. And we need to have as accurate as possible when we say there's 6 million work opportunities or whatever it is. We need to have the assurance that that's the case. But our DG can't be the accounting officer for Bombella. All our DG can say is that the accounting officer, the municipal manager in Nkomati, has signed off on X number of work opportunities and have reported it to us. But we can't be held responsible for that. So that's the problem, okay, and it's created problems. So let me take an example that's not given here, okay. One of the best performing, probably the best performing work opportunity, not so much short-term equivalent, but work opportunity metros in South Africa, consistently for several years now, has been the city of Cape Town. And I'm deliberately choosing it for silly political reasons, but not wanting to be silly. Stupidly political about it, if you understand what I'm saying. The city of Cape Town currently is at a 20%. It was hitting 100% consistently. It's suddenly down to 20%. In terms of the incentive grant, it was at 61%. Sorry, I've lost the figure, but it's of that order. 61% against the straight line 75%. Now, we're not sure. We think there might be some shifting of staff and those things that then create disturbances. But we think also it's related to these new reporting requirements, which is creating havoc everywhere. Okay. So we're doing two things, as the colleagues reported. The one thing is that we're doing our best now, as best as we can, to meet what we think are extraordinarily high standards, as impossible standards for us to fulfill. On the AGM, putting a lot of burden then on small municipalities and even big metros to say we want certified, electronically downloaded ID copies of every single participant and so on. And they're all finding it difficult in varying degrees to do that. But we're doing our best to do that. But at the same time, we're engaging the AG, the carbon monitoring and evaluation, et cetera, to say, look, we were doing pretty well consistently, and now it looks like we're not. We need to know where we're not. We need to know collectively, not narrowly the Department of Public Works, we need to know where there are problems. Of course, we need to expose corruption, absolutely. Clientelism and so on, absolutely. And we do want to do that. So that was the sort of introductory remark that I would make, okay, which also then goes to what the Honourable Mattiello was raising. These are alarming statistics, but let's not become like, we're absolutely convinced that we're well on target to meet this year's work opportunities in practice. But the ability to report it according to the Auditor General's over-stringent requirements, we think, is making it look as though that's not the case. So it's not as though the EPWP has disappeared. It's not like it might have disappeared in some places. It certainly isn't doing as well as it could in others. But overwhelmingly, it's happening. And out there, as we speak, there are hundreds of thousands of South Africans doing public employment programs, actively engaged in. Okay. But sorry, long speech, but just to make that point. And we were coming here to ask for the committee advice and assistance and support, if possible, in this matter, because it's affecting DA-controlled provinces and municipalities, ANC-controlled ones, and it's our concern as the Department of Public Works, not that we want the one lot to do well and other lots to preach some political point. We want South Africa to do well, and it requires collective, collaborative work. Okay. So I think I've...
The deputy minister said this is not our fault, that these programs were not reported. So whose fault is it? Does it fall under the municipalities, or, I mean, who are we supposed to be looking at to rectify this so that the department doesn't look bad?
Principally, I was saying it was the well-intentioned fault of the AG, in setting, not understanding the complexity and cooperative nature, essentially cooperative and collaborative nature of these programs, and therefore expecting one department to be the accounting office for the entire program on the one hand, but then expecting municipalities, a variety of implementers or responsible, local responsible, provincial responsible, or other national line departments, all to be reporting into us. So it's not a question now of blaming this or that municipality, where we need to be blamed, where municipalities need to be blamed then. But often it's not that they're not trying to report, it's just that they don't have the ability to download electronic certified copies of IDs into National Head Office. Even the Department of Environmental Affairs, which is a well-equipped, efficient, and well-run department, which is running very good EPWP programs, has four different systems, and therefore finds it difficult to report to us. So we are engaging with them to help them to sort themselves out, as we can. We're engaging with the City of Cape Town. We're engaging, et cetera. We're not wanting to point fingers anywhere so much, except where fingers require to be reported. You know, why aren't they getting IDs? I mean, that's a problem in Mbombela. That's unacceptable. Why aren't they attendance reports? That's a problem. But the other stuff we think is we've got to sort out and have a different arrangement, which in practice was how we operated until the first 3 quarters of the year. Okay. So I hope that kind of clarifies. So we're not trying to escape responsibility or authority. So when you say this, because that was the question then, say that others also have a responsibility in the matter, I think it was the Honourable Kapani, are we not then losing some of our responsibility? No, this is a collaborative. So it's not as though other departments are getting onto our turf for what we've got to work together. Then just a couple of other issues. The one specific thing, it's a little bit of a detail, which others can answer, but on the grant issue, people don't lose their access to grants, households or individuals who are getting child support grants or whatever, who come onto the program. It's an addition, and absolutely should be, and we're fully supportive of it. Okay. Obviously, if they're earning somewhere else, that's a problem. If they're a civil servant, for instance, who are also getting stipends, and that's something that we do check through IDs and personal records and so forth. I won't go into some of the details there, but that's the point. On the main issue, okay, where are the men? Well, if 69% of the participants are women, and let's make allowances for transgendered individuals, and there are, and actually I know of some who are actually active in the program, playing a wonderful role, let me say that. But then basically, the men are 31%. That's where the men are, they're 31%. And I think this reflects several things. So I don't want to be dismissive of your reason. I don't agree with your patriarchalism, but the underlying issue that you're raising is, I think, a profound and important point. Okay. And that's why I'm not being I might sound polemic about that, but we do need to think about it. The age profile in the youth category are men and women, young men and young women. Okay. What it's telling us is that men, when we go to programs, we find, even interestingly, the infrastructure programs, like the road maintenance program, Zibambele, which the Gundalache thing, similar programs. Okay, Gundalache has this. I think we're trying to pick it up again. I think the province is trying to pick it up. It was a great program. It lost momentum. But in KZN, it's got Zibambele. Overwhelmingly, it's women. Overwhelmingly, the age profile is about 45, 50 or against of those participants. And that's telling us that in rural areas, households are typically women-headed and particularly female-headed and particularly poorest households. And I think men have we're picking it up in surveys, there's a tendency for men to regard this as not real work. It is real work. And it is paid, not very well necessarily, but it's paid. And women often, to generalize, but I think it's a fair generalization, are worried about their household and survival and take responsibility and really try to get onto these programs. Men often don't, okay. And this is the meaning and so forth. And so it's a bit of a psychological problem, and it's one that we are very concerned about and seek to think about. The related to your question is the youth issue. And it is of serious concern that we're not hitting that target of 55% of youth. And part of what we're saying is we need to find. We need one of these systems are part of a social security system, and those who are most deserving of social security are often female-headed households and so forth. And therefore, if we're getting a lot of 45-year-old women in the program, that's great because actually they're the ones that are carrying the responsibility for extended households and so forth, typically in our situation. But we've got to get men and young people. Men and women into the program as well, because that's where the unemployment is the highest. And therefore, we've got to find programs which are also attractive and also have. If you're a 45, 50-year-old woman in KZN in a rural area, most of them have been on that program since 2009, since it was started, and that's okay. So it's semi-permanent. It's not full time, but it's 2 days a week, but it's semi-permanent. They're on it for as long as they like, and that's fine. But for young people, you hope that they will go on to something else. And therefore, we need to design programs which also have a little bit of technical interest, which appeal to youth, which also have possibilities of going on into self-employment or formal sector employment, either in the public or private sector. So now, the problem, and that then attaches to the question of training and artisanal trade training and so forth. And that's the so that's part of the dilemma that we're facing. Again, a number of questions came up. Do we maximize our spend? It's never enough in the face of this unemployment crisis. Do we maximize our spend on numbers? Okay. Of people, of participants. And therefore essentially play a social security role? Or do we look at building in training and interesting vocational issues in the course of the participation and so on. When you start to do that, you attract the possibility of young people, you create the possibility for graduation out of the program, but you're spending a lot more of your budget on capital equipment, on training, and so on. And so the numbers that you get tend to be low and complicated. So that's the dilemma that we're confronting. And our response is there's not a single answer to it. We need to have a diversity of programs, and we need to be clear about what particular programs are trying to achieve and what others are trying to achieve. And not trying to do everything in one program and fail on all accounts. And that's the difference. So all our programs must have some training. So the Zibambele, road maintenance, 2 days a week where a household looks after 500 meters of a road. They're given basic training, they're given basic equipment, and so on, and the upgrading possibilities and so on for the participants. But the emphasis is not there. The emphasis is on getting, in the test we've got some 40,000 households who are contracted in KZN, and another 8,000 in Queen who are contracted into the program, and it's consistently been there over a considerable time. Okay. Now, so what about you? So we're trying to move into things like solar water heater installation and maintenance as an example. It's got a bit of plumbing in it, it's got a bit of electricity in it, and it's got post-participation possibilities because solar water heaters are finicky things and hailstorm is not enough in Mamelodi or whatever. So there are possibilities of setting up a local SME that does a bit of plumbing and stuff, but also can do repairs on solar water heaters and stuff. But then we've got quite a lot of training and involvement, and therefore it's hard to expand the numbers, and you're not going to have 10,000 SMMEs that are doing our plumbing and solar water heating installation in Mamelodi. But you see this a dilemma that we're addressing, and it's a good dilemma, it's not a bad dilemma, but it's a question of being conscious about it and therefore adapting appropriately. On the crime issue, which the Honourable Sultani was touching on when he talked about the youth and men, because it's true that the jails are more full of men than women, and full of lots of young people. And that's why, by the way, we handed out, and if colleagues are interested, those three research case studies done by the Centre for the Study of Violence and Reconciliation into CWP programs, in particular the one in Manhattan, which is crime ridden. Yesterday, three more people were killed in gang fighting and so on. That CWP is doing brilliant work, according to the Independent Trust Survey, in building community cohesion, in reclaiming streets from gangsters, and working with them. And some of the and they've got parolees on their programs as well, so that they don't just return when they come out of prison. They don't return. So there's an attempt to. But that was long winded. Your question is exactly right. Where are the men and where are the young people in this thing? Because part of what these programs need to be about is not just the money, but addressing community cohesion and the huge problem of what unemployment brings, disproportionality, criminality, and so forth. And there are some inspiring examples of where we can see that they do make a difference. Okay, I think that I've spoken far too long. And I think I've covered the issues here. Let me hand over to the more proficient colleagues for the more detailed questions. And they get that with the feet to correct anything that I said which was well intentioned but wrong.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Officer, did you say that?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Amos covered indeed quite a few areas. There are two main areas that remaining that we should reflect on or should respond to. That's with regard to the integration grant, which I remember, and then on training issues also. If there's been anything that members would feel that's not adequately covered, we could certainly respond. So I will give over to my colleague Ignatius Rio, and then CJ will respond. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister. I'm going to answer some of the questions, especially on the integrated grant and some of the infrastructure sector questions. The integrated grant, if the money is not spent, then according to the Division of Revenue Act, it has to be returned to the National Treasury by the eligible public body. So the question was, what happens to the money if it's not been spent? So So it has to be returned by the public bodies. Then also, there was a question about the expenditure in the different provinces being varied. And a lot of it, the issue of the delayed projects is something that is factual, because we have letters, responses from the accounting officers of those public bodies. Wherever we have low expenditure, we then write them a letter to say, we will not transfer the next tranche of funding unless you explain why you are underspending, because we don't just disperse. There has to be good reasons given by the public bodies, and a lot of the reasons we've gotten is that it's delays in projects, or they sometimes write saying they want to do another project, because a condition for the transfer of the funding is that these public bodies sign agreements with us and indicate the projects that they are going to implement. There was a question about the Northern Cape. Why is the transfer 96%? The transfer is 96% because we stopped funding for one of the departments, the Northern Cape Department of Health, and it was because of an expenditure. We transferred the first two tranches, which is 70%, but then we could not transfer the last tranche because the expenditure was very low. We wrote to them to explain to us reasons why there's an expenditure. We did not get satisfactory responses, and so we decided to stop the funding, and we had to write to Treasury in that regard as well. So we're not convinced that we need to transfer the funding because we're not getting good reasons. So that's why it's 96%. On the infrastructure sector grants, the reason why the reporting it appears to be low is largely the reporting issue that the Deputy Minister has spoken about. That in terms of the compliance issues, they have been the certified IDs, but on the ground, the number of work opportunities is higher than that. And on the ground, a lot is happening. The Gundulashu program, the Deputy Minister has also spoken about that. We have similar programs now that we're implementing, which is the road maintenance programs in KwaZulu-Natal. 40,000 participants on the program annually. In the Eastern Cape, we have a similar program. The household contractor program, which also employs about 40,000 participants, and we're trying to roll it out to the different programs. We partner with the Department of Transport in that regard. Another program from that was similar to Gundulashu was what we call now the Vukupile Contractor Development Program. So we've learned a lot of lessons from the Gundulashu program, and it's on that premise that in ETWP we've rolled out similar programs to Gundulashu and we implemented them across the country. Within the province itself, the Limpopo province, we're having discussions with them to see how they can revive their maintenance programs. Those are the responses on the and then I think just to say, in terms of what do we do to some of the participants? On some of the programs, in terms of exits, the program is helping to follow up on some of the participants who have been trained. For example, in the Vukupile Contractor Development Program, since its inception in 2004, we've trained over 476 contractors who have exited the program. Currently in the program, we have about 250 contractors that have been trained. Out of the 476, 108 are still active. And we monitor that on the CIDD. We work with the different public bodies to ensure that there are suitable projects for them where they could participate and tender for. So we try to monitor post the exit of the program. But I think the point is that EPWP cannot guarantee placement beyond the program, because the other parts of the economy have to play their role as well. And then in terms of the NYS program, the National Youth Service program, we've also tried to place some of the participants who've been trained. For example, for the intake for the 14-15 financial year, where we had 1,288 youth, we've helped place at least 339 post the program. We've
trying to place them with the contractors. Some of them have been absorbed into the assistance program, and others have been assisted to make applications to technical, vocational, and education training colleges as well. And some have had short course training in technical field. So we try, where feasible, to be able to help the participants boost their participation in the PWP. Thank you.
With regards to training, we have
Training
Center Africa, which is
the cost of training varies. If we look at the allocation in the presentation, and also the number of beneficiaries for the various items, skills programs, learnerships, the calculation would mean that on average a skills program would cost you about 14,000, a learnership would cost you 24,000, and an autism development program with subsidization from the Mercy to would cost you about 150,000 in terms of that. In terms of the duration of a skills program, it will vary. It will just show how it looks. So let's take, for example, this is all the skilled programs that were listed. So if we go up here and we look at the heading, it will give you column D, would give you all the skills programs. If I click here and I sort it, and I'll say we could choose any course, let's say we choose also quickly, choose any course, let's take that one, as general education and training certificate in construction, and then if we look then at this is the full skills programs, so you find that the skills program in itself would require that the participant would undertake 11 modules. The modules would then be the unit standard titles that you will see over there, and these are all, as mentioned, it is all aligned to the national qualification framework. If we then go further and we then ask what is the guidance in terms of what is the duration of these programs, for the 11 you would find then, if we add it up, I think yes, it will sum it up, yes, it will be 58 days worth of training. Because within the CT environment, they've got certain ways of calculating it. In other words, credits times 10 divided by 8. So each of the skills programs will have set modules or set unit standards that must be undertaken. In terms of small business development, we do have a very small function in terms of small business development. On average, we support about 300 SMMEs. We've got a partnership we're busy renewing at the moment. We previously had a DTI MOA. We're working now with the Department of Small Business Development, where they would assist our small businesses with training, with diagnostic assessments, and include them in certain key programs that they are running. For example, a retail program that they're partnering with WNR CETA. So some of those initiatives we are engaging with the small business department with at the moment. In terms of artisan development, if you look at that cost of 150,000, if we had to take the entire budget of 369 million, we'd only manage to train 2,500 beneficiaries. So for us, it was weighing up, you know, the various requirements. Some programs would require on-the-job training. Some programs would have a long-term focus. And so depending on that, we need to speak to all the needs that are out there. If we ask the question why certain provinces do not get access, what you will notice, and my manager always asks me this, he says, why don't you have targets for the provinces? And what we simply answer is, if you look, we've got overall targets. We've got skills program targets. We've got learnership targets. We've got autism development targets. These targets were agreed with the Department of Higher Education and Training. And the only thing they tell us is, if you want to get more money from us, you need to deliver. And in terms of the delivery, they are very happy as the Department of Higher Education and Training, because we've gotten a clean audit for them in the last 8 years. What they're also happy about is, if any public body runs into difficulty, irrespective of whether it's EPW, they always refer them to the EPWP. So we would say to any public body, Department of Higher Education and Training has transferred 100 million of the 369 million. The window is open. Apply. And so it also answers the question to the infrastructure or the social sector. We say to everybody, apply openly. We go and provide assistance. But at the end of the day, we do not want to run into the typical problems that is faced in terms of DHET. They cut the funds. They refuse to commit to the full allocation. So we've got certain commitments that we have agreed with them, and we open it up to all public bodies, and we assist public bodies on how to access the funding. In fact, on our website, we also have our standard operating procedure, which clearly lays out how to access the money, what forms must be filled out. We go in, we assist public bodies to fill out the forms, but for us, key is to be able to say, we've identified your courses, we've put out, you can see how detailed these are. We assist them to do it, and then it goes to an application process, and then the procurement starts with regard to it. We finish up the procurement, then we open up the window again. But we don't close. It is not closed to anybody. It's open to everybody. So typically the NPO program will tell you, we do not have budget. So you will find some of the programs that we're trained on is typically for the NPO sector, because the NPO sector is saying, we can't allocate like the infrastructure projects or the social sector projects a percentage of our allocation for training. And so as mentioned, this is only part of the funding, but we expect public bodies also to consider training to be very, very important. In terms of the policies, we do interesting work with regard to the policies. The policies is a very strange one in the sense that it's been a three-year, four-year crusade with us. And so, you see, this agreement that we put out here is what we talk about as the protocol. And Public Works provides the standard protocol. We then go about consulting with everybody, and then we try and determine, you know, what get the buy-in. Does everybody agree with the content? For example, we came through to Overstrand, sorry, to Overberg municipality, and the mayor met with me. She said, I don't like your clauses. And I said, Mayor, sit down. What clause don't you like? You know? And we then worked it all out. We changed it, and that was it. With the policies, this gives you an example of Wittenberg policy. So what we expect as the first step is we say a policy takes very long to endorse through a council. The protocol is the one that comes first. And in the protocol, let me just go back, it puts out everybody's responsibility, and it then says what the deputy minister says. This is the responsibility of everybody. So if you look at the signatories, for example, it would be your premier. So it will be your Minister of Public Works, your Premier, your MEC, of Corporate Governance in KZN, your Executive Mayor, okay? Everybody's got an accountability with regard to the EPWP. And so we'll put up all the responsibilities for the public body. But I want to go to the end in which we then say that from phase two, this global target of 6 million is not Public Works alone. Municipalities also need to work with us, and these are then the work opportunities that municipalities commit to for the full 5 years. Okay, so that's the first leg that we do. The second leg that we undertake then is we then say, okay, we would like an agreement to stand the test of time. It needs to go through the council. The council needs to be aware of it. But then we need to ask questions such as, let me just go to an index rather. What is the legal framework of this? What is the background within the municipality? What's the unemployment look like in this municipality? Which sectors are important in this municipality? Then we ask, what is your institutional arrangements within the municipality? Who coordinates this? Which sectors are you undertaking? What is the conditions of employment? How do you use the incentives? The SEM processes. And for us, those SEM processes are critical, because if you don't put it in the SEM processes, that you're going to undertake EPWP, and you're going to require the contractor to give the information to you once the project is done in terms of attendance registers, whatever else. I mean, it then becomes a personal fight, but you need to ensure that it's in the contract so that you can get the information out there so you can report on. And then it puts up the targets, it puts up the performance indicators, it puts up the funding mechanisms, puts links it to the IDP, looks at the reporting processes, looks at implementation, puts the targets in the end. Then that was the phase two component. I don't think I opened up the policy addendum. There's another one that we then opened, that we then produced as a standard for the municipalities, and we then said to the municipalities, there are certain things that changed in phase three. So now you just need to approve, have your council endorse an addendum. And so we give the standard addendum to the public bodies, we then go and workshop them, and now in the next quarter, this quarter, we are actually going to pair this policy endorsement, we're going to pair that with the incentive workshops that we are having. So the question is, where are we standing at the moment? I just opened up the big document, and you're not looking at the big document. Open up the smaller document. Okay, now we might as well go to the big document. If we ask where do we stand at the moment, and I'm just going to increase this. Where are we standing at the moment? If we look, this is where we're standing at the moment in terms of the protocols. We'll find that we've managed to sign, as I said, it's a long endeavor. It takes us very long. We started in 2014-15, only 123 protocols were signed. Then 15-16, 92 were signed in quarter 2, 61 were signed in quarter 3 and 4. So 153. In total, we only have two municipalities that are outstanding. Declabing was under administration, and Overstrand was only received on the 4th of April. So it means that Overstrand is not fully signed. My minister still needs to sign it. That's why we didn't include it for this. We also then do just the protocols. Let me just get the protocols here quickly. Yes. The policies out, but I do have the statistics on my computer and I don't want to waste any more time, but this is also what we track. Mrs. Adams asked the question, you know, what is the functions of the districts? So for example, we say to the districts, you need to take ownership and you need to lead in the district. So this would say to you, Sarah Bartman, Eden, West Coast, Amatori, how many meetings have you held this year? And so for us over the next period is to address the problem area. So who's not meeting? These are the municipalities that we are thinking are not functional. France is what you can't meet once in the year. Okay? And then it's the KZN ones and some of the Northwest ones. So for us, it is ensuring that those forums take place, but at the same time also intervening to look at the quality issues that are discussed at those particular forums. So for us, it's very often the coordination role that we are trying to undertake. Thank you very much.
I just have a query about one of the statements that was made. I'm a bit confused. When you talk about an artisanship, it's more than 150,000 rand. Now, that seems to me that you're then doing the job of technicons and other formal structures, and I'm not too sure why you're doing that. I didn't see that as your role at all. You provide job opportunities. Why are you now growing your own timber when we've already got educational institutions? Thank you.
This is all a partnership, and I think when you look at the National Skills Fund, even the fact that we managed to get that funding, actually how Department of Higher Education and Training works is it says we put up the National Skills Fund, and the National Skills Development Strategy. So that's the first thing, which puts out what does the country want to achieve as a whole. Then it says we are looking for partners that will help us enable us to be able to do it. If you meet the requirements for us to undertake artisan development, apply for the funding, we will then allocate. So what it simply says is that the Department of Higher Education will say that artisan development may be 5,000 or 17,000 we want to train globally. But part of that audience will come from the EPWP participants. So it's saying to us, just let's partner with you. So it is not as if we are duplicating. It is saying that there is a certain group, for example, they say to us, but you've taken a youth in your National Youth Service.
You've taken in them for a year. Where do you take these youth that you've given some insight into the construction area or the plumbing? This is now an opportunity for you now to go ahead as Department of Public Works and look at, on a small scale, how you assist to exit some of the beneficiaries, even though we don't like to talk about EPWP exiting. So through these partnerships, we look at the global picture, what does the country require, we apply to it, we get the funding, and then we partner with them to be able to undertake this.
That's why TJ looked at me when the question was being asked. Because I think some of the earlier questions, there was one thing, one general issue that I didn't quite respond to. Because I think we must be careful along the lines that you're suggesting, that we don't start to carry. Imagine that it's our job. One is a great formal sector job, but it's not our job, other than in the limited area of employing people in the public works or something. Even the training aspect is not primarily our function. And that's why it's T-led colleges, it's a range of other things that are primarily responsible. And if I'm understanding CJ correctly, I think what you're trying to say is where there's an affinity with what we're doing in any case in a public employment program, and there is funding, it can be helpful. So one program which I had a look at Port St. John's was, I think it was a community work program, and it was doing food gardens, basically. And then run through COGSA, if I'm not mistaken. But it was several different brigades basically involved in it. But many of the participants were happy simply to be doing food gardens and doing community work programs. But some of them had a trick and wanted to acquire agricultural skills and go further. And so we then link up with COGSA and the Community Work Program through through accepting some of the skills funding and enable them, not all of the participants, but those with some academic skills and therefore with some likelihood, and who showed an interest, and I think it was about 100 odd of them, who then we were able to fund to do AgriFISA, to go through the AgriFISA in order to. So I think, but I like the question that you, that the Honourable Caliban is saying, because we mustn't imagine, because we're going to think under the responsibility. So when people say, why is it only 98 out of that trainees? Hopefully that isn't the only number in South Africa. But it's where there's an affinity with a going program and their possibility for the system, and there's some fun. I think that's the philosophy. But I do need to watch myself, because sometimes I do get carried away in the direction that you're wanting. So I think that's right. Because they're very professional, as you can see from the presentation, and very committed to the program. But we
thanks, Deputy Minister. Deputy TJ, you wanted to add something, and then I noticed Mayor Matiel and Honorable Sultan. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Yeah, the two questions that I just want to make respond to briefly. The first is a comment, the importance of the protocols and the agreements that we sign. It ensures that public employment programs are institutionalized over a five-year period and even beyond. And that's very important for us, so it does not become like a stop-go kind of programs. The two questions outstanding, Honourable Chair, where are these numbers for these people that we are talking about? The other one was the question that said, are people working part-time or full-time? I think Jeffrey must touch on some of it. The public employment programs we are driving is project-linked. But we participants can obviously exit one project when it comes to an end and join another project. So we have a mixed bag in a way. Sometimes projects are short in duration. Others have seen they are ongoing projects because poor people need ongoing participation in these projects. Where are these trying to, we are often reporting numbers that you see here, and the question is actually asked then, but where are these people? And just to give the portfolio committee the assurance that we also conduct what we call site visits on a regular basis to we sample lots of projects across the different sectors, and we keep record of whether these women that people are reporting they are working there, or men or young people. And then we are trying to intensify this particular process through our geographic information systems that we have introduced, and some of it's under construction, so to speak, and development, but where we can link a site to these portfolio of evidence that we have tried to provide you with, amongst others, through these printouts that we didn't touch on today. Thank you, Jen.
Honorable members here.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And thanks for the response that we just got. I'm seeking clarity on slide 39, slide number 39, more especially on Limpopo, what is happening there. Does it mean that everything is well, there are no problems there? Because I don't see, when you talked about the ID submitted, it seems they've submitted everything and so on. And the absence of Free State on this slide, what is happening there? Does it mean Free State is not participating at all as far as EPWP is concerned? Thank you.
Thank you, sir. In the response by the Deputy Minister, I may have missed something there regarding my question on the comparative figures, which give a sense that in provinces like the Eastern Cape, there appears to be less participation than in provinces like Gauteng. I don't know if in his response he in any which way alluded you know, to that. But with regard to page 32, definitely I don't recall anyone addressing my question there, which was why are there no learnership programs in something like four provinces there? You see four zeros on that page. What is happening there. Those are my two outstanding sets. Thank you very much.
Responses from the department.
This slide that the honourable member was referring to, Limpopo got a clean audit. Yes.
Of the five
projects that were visited, four up to quarter two. So, and Free State was still being audited, so they were not included in the interim report by the AG. As indicated previously, they will be going back again, so in April we'll continue with the same cycle. And so for now, the interim report is at Limpopo in Kachin. In terms of this particular slide, as indicated,
I'm not sure what's the... What part of the excitement at the back there?
More ladies employed in the program than men.
Oh, okay. Okay. Say that at Shaitan.
Well,
with regard to the question on how come there are zeros with regard to some provinces, Honourable Member, as indicated, what we do is on an annual window period, we open up a funding window, and we then depend on the public bodies to indicate whether they would undertake which programs they'd like to train for. And then you saw the long list of skills programs that we undertake and learnerships. So the public body will say to us, for any learnership, you have a theory part and you also have a practical part. So for the practical part, you would have to have an area to place the learners. So that could also affect why you would not have certain placement in those areas. But it's an open funding window, and it depends on where the priority is seen by the public body in itself.
It all
depends on whether you enjoy journeying with the Department of Public Works. I get it a lot in certain provinces. And so some public bodies will say, look here, I also have access to heaters in my province, so I prefer to go myself. Other people would say, but 369 million to push that through your procurement system, and each contract is costing you, what, 24,000, and you have an average of 10 people, 240,000 per contract. How many individual contracts do you actually sign? And so they then say, but as public works, you can sustain it because you've got very long procurement phases. And then we say to them, we try because we actually centralize it. We ask people to assist us. So some public bodies say, well, it's better to dial direct. So they will dial direct. But they are very aware because they do have, we participate in the economic people.
Just one question, we only spoke with regard to the automobile industry. That's a big question asked also by Gilbert.
We do not go directly to Mrs. Adams to the automobile. We engage with the Mercy. Through the chair to Mrs. Adams, yes. Yes, Chair. Oh, basically, what I'm saying is that we've got a partnership with the Mercita, and the Mercita has certain living paying companies, and it's through that agreement that we are able to access all the automobile companies. So, for example, it's a partnership with VW because slightly less than 10 of our learners are placed there. Mercedes-Benz, for example, and smaller spray painting companies we have partnerships with throughout the country.
Northern Cape, there was also an auditor training program that we were involved in, which I think appears that you might not have an automobile thing in Northern Cape, but there are obviously other major industrial players, and we do. They also.
I think an aspect of Honourable Adams's question was she is aware of the centralization of the automobile manufacturers. She made mention of TE, and then she made the mention of Rosslyn outside Pretoria. But the nub of her question was that the artisans or people that are trained there, are they only from those localities, surroundings, or those provinces, or is there a method of drawing them from throughout the country? That was the essence of the question.
Yeah, sure.
let me just give some little bit of a response. I think the artisan program was decentralized to all, was advertised in all the provinces, and so it's not only one in terms of the locality. Just to give an example, we had a program in partnership with the Department of Northern Chef Education, and we trained 100 youth. We took 100 youth on an artisan program, and about 60 of them, as we speak now, are qualified artisans that were placed within companies in the Northern Cape. Thank you.
Thank you very much, good folks. Honorable Sultani seems perplexed, but in want of replies to one of his contributions, questions, could you kindly remind us?
I said that, of course, the two questions that I've reminded you about are, in a way, linked. I referred to the comparative figures on page 12, which give one the sense that there seems to be less interest in other provinces than in some provinces rather than in others. And I've made a direct comparison between the Eastern Cape less interest and how Deng maximized their, interest with regard to youth employment in particular. And I remarked that youth unemployment in the Eastern Cape is reported to be as high as somewhere between 42-45%. What's your response there to, if I may get a response? Thank you.
Through you, Chair. Yeah. Thank you, Chair. I think the first thing is that the EPLP projects are done by public bodies in the provinces. And so we give them a framework, but we don't discuss which projects they do. That's the first thing. Then also, generally speaking, in terms of our reporting, the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal, and largely our reporting, you see, from Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal, they've been contributing, they've been in terms of reporting on EPWP, they've had the highest numbers over the number of the years as we speak. What you may be seeing in the current figures is an issue of the current challenge is reporting. And what on slide 12, that shows participants on the pending list where we don't have certified IDs. So it's just to say the 46,000 is data we have on the system. That's where we need to get the certified IDs. It's not the number reported. It should be reported, but it's just data that needs to be cleared. But if you go to the previous slide, it will show you the actual number. That one, you will see that if you add up the numbers, Eastern Cape actually, in terms of provincial departments, they are the only province where they have exceeded the target for provincial departments. And then you consider Natal as well, you see that they've reported a high number comparatively. So they actually are some of our best performing provinces, in spite of the fact that the general reporting picture is not good across the board.
Because we didn't properly at the time explain the pending issue. So part of what we've asked the department to do is, okay, there's rigorous and very difficult to fulfill AG requirements that we need to take an ID. The copies downloaded with us. But present a quite visible picture. So we've said that let us also get a sense of where we with their attendance records, they're assuring us that they've got the IDs themselves, but they're just asking to download them or whatever. We also create a pending list to give us a better and more realistic sense and a sense of degree of relief that people are out there working. It's just a reporting issue. So that's what the pending thing. So the fact that the Eastern Cape is actually quite small in the pending is a good sign, not a bad sign. It's a good sign. It means that they managed to report quite a lot, and that's why they're over-fulfilling on their part. Yeah, okay. But that's, we didn't, I think, in the presentation, the initial presentation, explain that sufficiently.
you very much. I see no further requests for comments or questions. Honorable Sultan.
Just as a parting shot, sir. So I've made this remark and other comments on which I serve. It looks like the general reporting format, so far as the South African government is concerned, is driven primarily by Treasury regulations or interests or bias, as different from the reason why a government needs to exist in the first place, which is to address issues of social imbalance. Consequently, here we just given figures, percentages, and what have you. It's about complying with the master's needs, the one who dishes out cash, and not about the social impact of the program. Nowhere are we told here that the socio-economic impact of all this exercise, figures, marketing, trials, and tribulations, you know, where does this take us to? And we're still left with a void. Consequently, government has to be seen to be failing when in fact it's making such a big effort, something that even we as opposition parties have got a reason to appreciate. But there's one sentence missing, and that is to say, after spending so many billions in a year, we have changed the lives of so many people in this way and that way and that way. After training 1 million people as an example, so many of them are placed somewhere, they are earning good salaries and so on, as a global report. So I would want to appeal, therefore, to the DM, speak to his colleagues to say, we think there is a crying need out there to restructure our reporting format and not just be compliant with the Treasury regulations, which is perhaps one of the reasons why he's been complaining about the reporting format. It's about compliance. Thank you for the opportunity, Chair.
Honourable Bender ended where I began, but that was the point. I'd like my staff to be working exactly on that, to assessing the developmental impact. Are we making a difference to the racialized inequality of our society? Are we doing that and that and that? And spending too much time on compliance. We must comply, but the standards must be appropriate to the key challenges. So it's a frustration for them, it's a frustration. I really appreciate those parting comments. Hopefully we can part now.
Honourable Frutani, thanks for the input that you have made. It's not one for the road. But I think that you spoke to a number of policy issues. But there's another aspect. The responsibility of portfolio committees. The responsibility of a portfolio committee within the remit of its responsibility of oversight over the department, engagement with the ministry. But the responsibility is also to look at legislation, how entities are carrying out their responsibilities, and then to point out weaknesses and where things could be done better. So your engagement, you are highlighting a very important aspect, but it's also our responsibility as the portfolio committee to highlight those issues and to seek a redress and a sharper focus on the social capital that should evolve from our responsibilities. So the issue that you raise is an issue that the portfolio committee should come back to and critically engage. It cannot be correct that in terms of the core function of Treasury, they've got their responsibilities, but it cannot be correct that all other departments should just be ticking boxes in order to meet
budgetary constraints, the broader picture. Ultimately, the issue that you also raised, what binds us as the ministry, as the department, as parliament, is our responsibility to the South African society, ordinary people in the streets there. What is it that we should do in order to use our varied positions in order to make life more meaningful for those individuals? That's our greater responsibility. So the issue we have not spoken to, as you make mention as you are closing the meeting, but the value is that for us it should be flat, and the issue that we return to, how can we better do our job in order to fulfill that broader non-political mandate? Good folks, it would seem this is how far we can traverse down this road today. I would like to thank the presenters who made the presentations, Deputy Minister and members of Parliament, stakeholders, media, whoever else is still here. Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.